You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
January 16th, 2016. And this is the Roto Experts in the Morning on Martin Luther King's birthday. Alongside the King, Scott Engel, Tony Zingata, Corey Parson taking the day off. I'm Greg Sauce. What is going on, Scotty?
How you doing, fellas? Good to see you. And interesting Sunday of football.
Your mic's not on, Scott.
Yeah, that would be better.
Yeah, you got to turn the mic on.
I'm waking up from the weekend.
You're waking up, yeah. Okay.
Very interesting Sunday of football. And looking forward to Monday, full slate of basketball, including a Cavaliers-Warriors rematch.
Yeah, big game tonight. Tony, what's going on, my friend?
Just got a lot of going on, right? We got football, we've got basketball, we've got golf, whatever. We got baseball coming up. I got a headache.
You got a headache? Oh, I hope it's too early for a headache, you know. We can't do that at 7 a.m. on a Monday. Not yet. You gotta wait till Wednesday for your headache. So
Wednesday.
You know, I watched obviously every game this weekend, and I think more than anything, what I learned while watching these games is that we shouldn't try to make something out of nothing. We shouldn't try to just predict, this hasn't happened all year, but it's going to happen. Because I think everything all weekend long, nothing surprised us. Everything kind of went the way that we could have expected. Sure, like, I go back to even last week, right, with the Giants. That, if the Giants' offense woke up, they could go on this magical run. But they hadn't scored 20 points in 2 months. Why were they going to start now? We go to this week, right? Like, Seattle's offensive line, for instance, that's been an issue all year long. The defense has been vulnerable without Earl Thomas. Atlanta's offense has been one of the best in the NFL all year long. Why would that change now? Kansas City, last night, sure, their team's fine, but Pittsburgh has this explosive offense. Did they score touchdowns? No. But why was that going to change now? Green Bay, 8 games in a row. Their offense is what this is. The defense of Dallas is fine. It was going to be an unbelievable game. And it was, right? And then you get to Houston and New England. And maybe New England didn't look as good as you expected them to do. Well, they still covered the spread, no problem. Why would that change now? We kept looking to find trends that would surprise us, that would shock us, that would seemingly make us be like, wow, we got that wrong. But this weekend kind of cemented the fact that this year, we didn't get this wrong, this seemingly these playoffs. We said back in week 5, Steelers are a team that had the ability to go to the AFC Championship game because of their offense. And again, I get it. They didn't score touchdowns. The defense stepped up. But they were a team that had this ability, and now they're here. Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers says, we got hot. We can win it all. We can, you know, not lose a game the rest of the way. And here they are. They're here. So this weekend just cemented the fact that we kind of knew, to me, what to expect. We got it.
Yeah, I think a lot of those narratives were true. You know, you saw in Seattle and Atlanta, the offensive line was an issue. They definitely missed Earl Thomas on defense. In the Houston-New England game, New England played a little bit sloppy, but, you know, ultimately it didn't matter against Brock Osweiler. You know, Green Bay-New England, I think Dallas got out of the type of football they wanted to play, and the defense got exposed a little bit more. But, you know, anybody who's blaming Dak Prescott, you know, for this loss, like, doesn't know football. You know, I've seen people doing that on social media, and they just don't know what they're talking about. They just, you know, they don't like Dallas for whatever reason. I think with Pittsburgh, it was the one interesting twist. You saw Pittsburgh's defense be a big reason for their wild card victory and how well they played down the stretch. They had the most sacks in the NFL down the last 9 games of the season. They averaged less than 19 points per game allowed during the last 8 games of the regular season. They played good defense, and they did it again last night. You know, Alex Smith was 0-for-7 under pressure. I think the one thing that we saw that maybe was a different turn for the narratives we were expecting is that Pittsburgh really did it with defense. We've heard the splits all year about how Roethlisberger doesn't play as well on the road. It didn't matter. They played well enough. Look, Chiefs tighten up in the red zone, but the Steelers played good defense. You know, there isn't an illustrious defense on paper remaining in the playoffs, but right now, to the four teams remaining, I think Pittsburgh's playing the best defense.
I think that Andy Reid basically cost the Kansas City Chiefs the game last night. Everybody knows the Pittsburgh Steelers are not good against the run. He ran the ball 14 times. He averaged 4.4 yards a carry. Pittsburgh was never in the lead. Andy Reid had a terrible game plan. He had an off track. It was perfect for a running game, and he didn't execute. I blame the coach for the loss in last night's game, and he basically got out-coached last night.
I don't know if I can blame Andy Reid on this one.
You don't have to blame him. I'm telling you what happened.
Well, you can blame him. You can do what you want. I'm gonna, see what I want. I think that they were there, right? Like the Chiefs converted a 2-point conversion to tie this game, and Eric Fisher got called for holding. I think like it's a tough spot. I thought Kansas City's defense played really, really well holding the.
Could have been up by 10, but so it wouldn't even have mattered.
Well, they could have, but they weren't. So,
because of an improper game plan.
Maybe, but it wasn't like Spencer Ware was going anywhere.
He averaged 4.4 yards a carry. He only ran the ball 8 times.
At least what I saw, that the game plan was not the issue. Scotty, where were you on that?
Obviously, Pittsburg's the fourth best team against the pass.
We're averaging 4.4 yards per carry. I think that's something you have to account for.
Of course.
No matter what, Pittsburgh put a lot of pressure on the pass. Maybe using the run more would ease some pressure on Alex Smith, especially the way Harrison was dominating Fisher.
Even their 14 carries is even a misnomer, because Tyreek Hill on three gimmick plays ran. Yep. Alex Smith ran twice. He only ran the ball 9 times in the game. Andy Reid outcoached himself.
That I believe.
A team that's fourth best against the pass.
So what do you think? Do you think it's just Andy Reid has gotten his own head, Tone? Is that like...
Yeah, I don't know what he did. This is a very conservative coach, right? And all of a sudden, I don't know, maybe he read all the people, complaining about how conservative they are. And last night, in that poor conditions, I don't know why they didn't run the ball more.
Well, I'm wondering maybe, and again, you're right. Obviously, 8 times, Spencer Ware only carried the ball 8 times, 35 yards. And I'm thinking the way Spencer Ware has looked over the past several weeks and months is simply he thought Spencer Ware had nothing left. And I think he thought Spencer Ware couldn't give him anything, and he dropped back the pass, and he thought that was going to do it with his gimmick plays and getting the ball to Tyreek Hill a little bit.
Maybe he didn't have confidence in the running game.
Yeah, and maybe he didn't have confidence, which was, again, as Tony said, getting in your own head.
Yeah, this was it was interesting to see that they went there, because I agree with you. Pittsburgh teed off on them defensively, and I'm like, what are they doing? Why are they – Alex Smith, 34 passing attempts. Like, it was crazy to me.
This game last night, Alex Smith and the Kansas City Chiefs falling to Pittsburgh, 18-16. We kind of expected Sunday would be the really good day of football, right? Like Saturday was going to be, okay. We thought Seattle-Atlanta could be fun. It wasn't. But we thought yesterday was going to be awesome. The first game was amazing. We'll get to that in a second. But last night, Kansas City and Pittsburgh moved to Sunday night for some BS ice storm ruling, Tony. Because that was like the biggest BS thing ever to me. Like they could blame whatever they wanted, ice, snow, hail, rain, whatever. But as soon as the report comes out on Sunday morning that now the NFL is considering permanently moving a game to Sunday night, or division weekend, you knew that was BS.
I thought about this logically, right?
Right.
I'm saying, if you have if you're concerned about fans going to a game because of the ice,
right?
Why wouldn't you play during the day when the sun's out,
right,
as opposed to making these people drive home at midnight,
sure,
after the game when it's been dark, it gets 10, 15 degrees colder? Like, it made no sense, right?
Oh, no sense, except the NFL knew how to get the ratings, and they did. And I'm sure it'll be monstrous and much more last night than it would have been on Sunday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Not a surprise. And I just hate the Roger Goodell, oh, yeah, we did this to make for the fans, the ice storm. Get the hell out of here. Get the hell out of here.
I was aggravated because I'm usually powering down to go to sleep for this show around 9 o'clock, 9:30,
Sure. Yeah, and I think
I had to catch the rest of the game early this morning.
Oh, you went to bed in the middle of the game last night.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. To me, they could use the logic, a lot of America has off the next day, it's a holiday. Not that they need to, they don't care. But they could use that if they want to. So last night, 18-16 was the final score between Pittsburgh and Kansas City. Spencer Ware, Tony said it, 8 carries, 35 yards, did have a touchdown. Travis Kelce, 5 for 77. But this guy's a loose cannon. I mean, this guy, he's just...
Oh, he's crazy, right?
He's an idiot.
He went off, like, after the game, you know, on the referee saying he don't even deserve to work at Foot Locker. But, like, you know, I'm watching the holding call on Fisher, and, you know, you got to look at the pictures really closely, but if you look close enough, you can see that he is grabbing some uniform there.
Oh, you didn't have to look closely. Yeah. Eric Fisher's
I had
down.
To look at it three times.
Oh, because maybe you weren't able to see the replay from last night.
No, I was looking at the pictures.
Oh, Eric Fisher just drove him down.
I was looking frame by frame. He drove him down, but you know, I wanted to see was he actually grabbing any jersey, and he was.
Oh, of course he was. That wasn't even close. I think Travis Kelce.
Kelce was saying, "Oh, they felt sorry for Harrison because he threw him to the ground."
No,
he's getting dominated all game.
That was BS. Eric Fisher. You know, I hate Tony holding on a 2-point conversion to decide the game, but it was holding. I was holding.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, right? I mean, it's one of those calls, like, when they first see it, I'm like, oh man, God. You don't call that.
Yeah.
And then you watch the replay, and you're like, yeah, you got
to
call
that. Like, what are you going to do? You never want to call that, but you have to. And then Travis Kelce is pissed off at himself. He drops the ball. He throws Mike Mitchell 10 feet, pushing him to the ground. Did he exaggerate it? Yes. Was it stupid? Absolutely. These guys just
some guys lose their head,
lose their minds
during the postseason,
yep.
Especially the ones that haven't been there a lot.
100%. Jeremy Maclin just 2 for 28. He had a big catch, of course, that coming after the Travis Kelce idiotic push in Tyreek Hill, 4 for 27. He couldn't get it going. And then for the second time in two weeks, we have another bullshit concussion call protocol. I mean, this is just insane to me. Because Chris Conley, almost, like, you could just watch, you saw his eyes in the camera shot. And they were glazed over. This dude had no idea where he was. And he misses one play.
Yeah.
One freaking play.
I guess there's different rules there in the postseason.
Like, Tony, this is miraculous. Like, how could you tell me this guy passed concussion protocol last night?
That's the problem, is, like, there is no... Like, we're led to believe all this thing, but all it takes is a couple yelling on the sideline and someone to get, and they get back in there. And I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing, but what you need in anything is consistency. So everybody should be playing under the same rules. And when other guys are going to the locker room and they want to stay out in the field, and yet other guys are allowed to go back into play. I actually said on one of the shows last week, if you're ever going to fix a game, this is the way to do it, is the concussion protocol thing.
Yes.
You could keep Tom Brady or Ben Roethlisberger out for a quarter. I mean, it's the craziest thing what's going on now.
Yeah, and like when we play fantasy football during the regular season, we get ticked off because guys, you know, in the concussion protocol, they don't return.
Right, but here they return one play later.
Yeah. It's better for Daly.
We saw it with Matt Moore. We saw it with Chris Conley. Really, really unacceptable to me. But again, the NFL does not care about us or about their concussion. They care about themselves and making money. So, whatever. Pittsburgh, Le'Veon Bell rushes for 170 yards. Didn't do much in the fourth quarter. but 170, 30 carries compared to Spencer Ware's 8, Tone.
Yeah, this guy's on a, you know, as good as Aaron Rodgers is playing down the stretch, this guy's playing every bit as good. And it's going to be interesting what he does against the New England Patriots, who have actually done very good against running backs this week. I don't see any way to stop him. I still think he puts up 150 combined yards next week.
Right.
He is on a planet of his own.
Yeah, he's unstoppable, especially, you know, if you're playing in fantasy football playoff leagues, because, like, to Tony's point, the guy is maybe the best runner in short space in the NFL right now, but if you take away the short space, then they'll put him up, they'll get him open in space, and he'll kill you.
He again, mostly a lot in the first half, and I'm watching this with my girlfriend, who clearly doesn't know his football as well as, let's say, even the average fan, right? Average fan does. And she just watches Le'Veon Bell, and she's just going, he's stopping. He's stopping and starting. How does he do that? Like, I have no idea. I have no idea. He literally he stopped. I'm like, yeah, that's what makes him the best. He goes, I clearly see how much better this guy is than, like, the guy on the other team. I'm like, yeah.
It's just like he plants the defender where he's going to move next. It's almost like basketball type footwork
in a way.
Yeah,
in a way it is, right.
It's almost like James Harden with a helmet.
It's insane. Yeah. Antonio Brown,
because Harden's got the best footwork I've ever seen.
It's Antonio Brown at 6 for 108 last night, 5 for 102 or something, or 101 in the first half. The only catch by Antonio Brown in the whole second half was that play on the last drive for Pittsburgh to seal the game for them. So Antonio Brown, non-factor in the second half, which was interesting. Jesse James steps up without Darius Green there, 5 for 83. And Ben Roethlisberger threw for 224 and an interception. What did you think of Big Ben in the passing game, Tony?
Yeah, this was a tough night, right? There was fog everywhere.
Yep.
The weather was terrible. I thought he did all right. And I think he was cautious, which is not Ben Roethlisberger as usual. Had one interception this game. It was 20 for 31, 224. He made the plays when he had to. Big first down, Antonio Brown in the fourth quarter. He didn't do anything exciting, but he didn't make a mistake.
Like, you know, kind of like we said, he didn't make a mistake, but not the same team. Another narrative, right? Not the same team as at home as they are on the road. They just weren't.
I'm giving him a pass, though.
Okay.
I'm giving him a pass because of the whole weather situation on this one.
And he didn't do anything to hurt them in a major way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think that, you know, the whole, it's going to be, they're going to go Foxborough. I expect them to show up, and I expect them to put up some points against the Patriots.
Yeah, that will obviously be a very good game. No question about that. Scotty, what did you
see the totals in those games this weekend?
No, I had not.
Yeah, the NFC title game, I think, has the highest point total
61.
Ever for a championship game. Yeah.
Well, the Patriots. The Patriots.
That's for
50.
What team?
I just
61. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I just read a stat. Here we go. This goes right along with that. And I have to find the freaking stat again. This is the first time since 1989, I think I want to say, that none of the final four teams left in the NFL is a top 10 defense.
Yeah, but we always talk about a defense wins championships. It might not this year.
Here we go. First time in history, yes, 1989, the NFL Final Four has zero teams with a top 10 defense.
Look, going into this, like the only team that we thought had the chance of being a shutdown defense was the Giants.
Sure.
And the Steelers are the team left playing the best defense, in my opinion.
Which, honestly, doesn't mean shit, clearly. You know, in this case,
it might mean something against New England. If they win that game, it's going to be because they play good defense.
I don't know about that. I think it might be because they're going to outscore them. I don't. I'm not buying this year. This year, given the stats we have, and I know Pittsburgh's playing the best defense. There's no doubt about that. But I don't think they're going to win because of their defense. I think they're going to, just because
won. If they win, their defense has to play a role.
Oh, but you could say that.
I don't think Roethlisberger
can
win a shootout on the road with Brady. I think the defense has to show up.
I think he could. I think Roethlisberger. I don't think he will, but I think he could.
I mean, if you look at this weekend, right?
Yep.
Three out of the four games, you had to get to 34 points to win.
Exactly.
That was the key, right?
Yep.
You had an off track in the whole Kansas City thing, which threw things off. But everywhere else, you get the first one of 34 wins. So, I mean,
exactly.
It's kind of crazy.
You're gonna have to put the points is going to be what matters, in my opinion. But, again, plenty of time to analyze that going into this weekend. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about Green Bay and Dallas. And I just want to read this stat, though. Randall Cobb said the final play of the game before the field goal for Green Bay, not a real play call.
No, it was like playground.
Rodgers told every receiver, here's what you're going to do. Here's what you're going to go. I'll get you the ball. And basically, he kind of just drew it on his hand like you and I were
like
in a huddle.
Yeah.
In a playground, like you said, Scotty.
Mm-hmm.
Insane. Insane. We'll talk about Aaron Rodgers, the Green Bay Packers, coming up next here on Roto Experts.
Welcome back to the Roto Experts of the Morning with the King, Scott Engel, Greg Sussman, Tony Cicada, here on a Monday morning the day after. And yesterday was a crazy day. You know, one of the things that we're looking at, the Steelers are the first team, Scott Engel, to win a playoff game without scoring a touchdown since the Indianapolis Colts beat the Baltimore Ravens 10 years ago, 15-6.
Yeah, and Chris Boswell with a record 6 playoff field goals yesterday. I guess people in Pittsburgh won't want to be zapping the kicker out of fantasy football next year because he's a hero. Interesting stat. I read this morning. Since 2003, only four quarterbacks have represented the AFC in the Super Bowl. They are Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, and one-time Joe Flacco has cracked the crew. So, and just the Patriots' run of success, and I know it's a fantasy show, but I just want to talk about this here. It's like, you know, they've made 11 conference title games under Bill Belichick. They're playing in their six in a row. And I believe Kevin Falk is like a columnist in the Boston area, and he's saying, you know, you guys are spoiled because you may never see anything like this again. I think people don't realize how what the Patriots are doing, how tough it is to do, especially in today's era football. Like they're really the modern era dynasty since 2000. We saw the Bulls and the Yankees in 2000, but especially in a league of parity, just what they're doing is incredibly. Incredibly amazing, and I think every Patriots fan out there should not take it for granted. It becomes really dangerous to take it for granted because 10 years from now, you could see a string where this team is just not making the playoffs after Brady and Belichick are gone.
It's so funny you say that because I've seen that in my life. Growing up, that was the worst franchise in all of sports, never mind football. They just couldn't get out of their own way, so it was a great turnaround. For the New England Patriots. And the only thing that I see resembling that as of late, and it's not to the same degree that the Patriots have had success, but I believe the Atlanta Braves, back when Maddox and Steve Avery and Bobby Cox were in the helm, they won like 14 out of 16 division titles. Of course, they didn't have the success in the postseason as the Patriots have had, but they ran that division in the National League for a long period of time.
Yeah, they only won one World Series, though. That's like, that's why I more go to the Yankees, because like to win four World Series titles in the span that they did is just incredible. And, you know, Yankee fans take it for granted, too, I think. You know, that they're like supposed to win every year. I think, you know, you look at the fact that they've won once in the last, 16 now? It just tells you how tough it is to accomplish. We play fantasy sports, and you know, we could run the table for like 3-4 years in a row for these teams to actually do it. It's like you really, a lot of breaks have to go your way. You have to stay healthy. It goes down to the front office and having key players just year after year after year. You know, you look at, there are only like a handful of franchises in the NFL that are continually there year after year after year.
Salary cap era in sports is absolutely insane, especially the National Football League. And that's why you look at this Dallas Cowboys team that lost yesterday, and you would say, hey, you know what? Don't worry about it. This team's going to be back soon. When you look at Ezekiel Elliott and you look at what Dak Prescott did, I got to give – I always said this morning on the news show. You know, I was not one of these people that says Ezekiel Elliott should be in the MVP discussion. I believe that with that offensive line that this guy – has a lot of help for him. That being said, when you watch that game yesterday, he gets an extra 3 yards on every carry.
He does. And like I said last week, 1,000 yards after contact this year. That's not just the offensive line. You look at him, I believe Le'Veon Bell is the best all-around player, but I believe right now Ezekiel Elliott is the best pure runner in the NFL. He can run on the outside. I saw him, tiptoe, 8-9 yards for a first down, like skittering along the sidelines yesterday. When you think he's got 2 yards, he pushes the pile for four more. If he's got any hint of an opening, he's gone for at least 8 yards. In terms of being the best pure runner in football, I think he has no equal, because it takes him about half a step to get ahead of his team. And then his balance, his vision, his speed, it's just an incredible combination. Le'Veon Bell's the best all-around runner in football, and nobody cuts on it. Nobody starts and stops like he does. But in terms of best pure runner, just carrying the football, period, I believe Ezekiel Elliott has no peer.
And it's so funny, you had mentioned about social media and the Dak Prescott negative perception out there. I'll tell you right now, I don't think he's ever played a better game in the National Football League. That game looked over in the first half, and he just put it together and played extremely well under tough circumstances. In his first year, no rookie quarterback had ever won a playoff and send his team to the championship, and this kid was that close, and Aaron Rodgers' performance away.
Yeah, he was, and You know, I think he became the first rookie to throw 300 yards in a playoff game. And it was a really good performance. It's just, you know, you can't blame Dak Prescott there with these weird calls for, like, even from Troy Aikman, like, if they don't start catching up now, we might have to bring in Tony Romo. I thought that was a little bit overblown, you know, even yes. from Aikman. This was not about Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott. Although they got so behind that they couldn't get in the rhythm they wanted to with Elliott, I think they got out of their comfort zone. When they're not used to falling behind by that. I think a young team after a week off came out kind of cold and really couldn't like get in gear until the second quarter. And then they're 18 points down. They get out of their game and they put the defense more on the field. And that defense, look, Sean Lee is a fine middle linebacker, but they don't get enough of a pass rush and they don't have enough playmakers in the secondary. And the defense was featured too much this week, and ultimately that was their undoing, I believe.
I think, though, it's tough. Like, the defense certainly didn't play that well, but Aaron Rodgers hasn't been stopped by anybody for a long time, it seems.
Well, I agree with that. Like, nobody's going to stop Aaron Rodgers, but and I believe this team is very well coached, and the defense played, I think, as well as it could in terms of effort. They just don't have the playmakers back there to challenge Rodgers. It's like, you know, even with Devontae Adams going out for a short time, the Cowboys this year were all about dominating with their offense and getting leads, and this was not their game flow, and that's ultimately why they lost, I think.
And, of course, the Green Bay Packers against the Atlanta Falcons. They get one more game in the Georgia Dome as they were set to close that down, but a home game in Atlanta. In that one, Matt Ryan, Aaron Rodgers, two guys that could be coming in the top two plays in the MVP race, right? I think a lot of people will be interested in that. The more and more people I listen to, they believe that Matt Ryan's going to win. And I don't think it's a bad choice for Matt Ryan. I just find it hard to believe that Aaron Rodgers doesn't win. But we can see the top two guys against each other in this week's game.
I don't think Aaron Rodgers is going to win. I was obsessed with Mike Florio. And I'm not saying you're forgetting this, but I think a lot of average football fans forget it. The MVP doesn't include the postseason. And
right,
I don't think
right.
Aaron Rodgers is going to get it because he was hot for a long stretch, but Ryan was better over the course of the full season.
See, I think Ryan has a better team. That's why I discount Matt Ryan a little bit, but I
think people are going to look at the fact that the Packers started 4-6, though, and Rodgers is not going to win.
See, that's the way you should win because America loves a comeback story, Scott. It's supposed
to
be a comeback story.
Oh, they do. I think it's great. I think it's great. You know, America loves a comeback story. We're all about Rocky Balboa, but you know, when you look at how Tom Brady missed four games, and you look at Aaron Rodgers started 4-6, I think it's either Ryan or one of the Cowboys.
We'll see how that breaks down. We'll come back. We'll break down Aaron Rodgers. You're listening to the Roto Experts in the Morning with the King, Scott Engel, Greg Sussman, and Tony Sicata back after this.
Sorry about that, gentlemen. I've returned for my sabbatical of about 15 minutes. Tony, did you miss me those 15 minutes?
Yes, yes, we were concerned about you.
Yes,
you were.
It's a crazy time and place in the world. We didn't know if something happened to you.
I appreciate that, Tony. I walked back in here. Scott's like, "Are you okay?" I was like, "You know what? I wasn't okay for about 15 minutes, but I'm okay now." You know, it happens. It happens. I was just disappointed that I didn't get to join the praise here. In regards to Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay, and of course what happened yesterday, and what was the game of the weekend? Again, not a surprise how good this game was, I don't think. And so, Scott, you said something earlier that I wanted to highlight on that, like, you know, people, you said that people that are blaming Dak for this don't know football, number one, and number two, obviously don't know what they're talking about at all. And I very much agree with you because Dak wasn't unbelievable by any means. Like, he made some mistakes. But either for 300 yards, three touchdowns, and an interception, has played as well as any rookie quarterback.
Maybe one mistake.
Right. But for the most part, he was the same guy
what
he was all year
mistake?
Long.
The interception on the screen pass.
The interception.
He made a bigger mistake than that, actually.
What was the bigger? What was the, that? Are you saying the kneel, the spiking the ball? Is that?
Yeah.
But is that him though?
That ended up being, I don't know. That's what I mean. I don't know if that was him or not.
Yeah.
They should have used a timeout there.
Absolutely. You should have used the timeout there and then figured it out, right? That was definitely leaving Aaron Rodgers anytime was a mistake. But I blame Jason Garrett. I don't want to blame Dak for that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure either if it was, you know, whose call it was at that point. But that was a haunting mistake. Like, we always talk about you can't take fab money with you. You can't take timeouts with you. And they left one on the board, and they left an extra time there, and they lost it down. Like, that was bad management down the end.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a high-pressure situation that clearly didn't work, right? Like, that clearly... leading Aaron Rodgers at any time was remarkable, and you got to give. Like I said, I was very impressed by Dak Prescott yesterday. I was very impressed by Ezekiel. Yeah,
Jared Cook. Nobody talks about, right? We killed this guy for how many years? He made a couple catches yesterday that a guy 270 pounds shouldn't be making.
6 for 104 in a touchdown yesterday. And the funniest thing,
have we been waiting how many years for this kind of game from Jared
Cook?
But
hold on, before you say that, on that last drive.
He's gonna be 2 for 14 next week in Atlanta. Watch.
Hold on.
That doesn't matter.
On the last drive, before Jared Cook caught that miraculous 30-yard pass, right? 35-yard pass. I texted my Packers fan friend who's watching the game, and Jared Cook dropped pass after pass after pass. He dropped 3 passes in a row, and I'm like, this guy sucks. I go, Jared Cook is the worst. And then he makes that catch.
This is why we keep going to a lot of people keep going back to fantasy, because 1 minute he'll make a confounding drop, and the next minute he'll make a terrific play.
It was the prototypical Jared Cook game if I've ever seen one. Where you're saying, yes, Jared Cook, and you're
not
cursing
in one
him.
Respect.
Okay,
it ended on a big positive
That's true.
Note.
That's correct. Until you get to that moment where he makes this unbelievable play, getting his feet in bounds, and I just can't believe Aaron Rodgers is just stupid good, man. Like,
I'll tell you. If they win the Super Bowl, though, Jared Cook forever
Legend.
Will be remembered. Yeah. Like, that one play is going to be something that everything in his career will be forgotten, and this guy's going to be a superstar.
100%.
People in Green Bay.
It will go down as, you know, their David Tyree moment in a way, where Jared Cook will be a legend. Wherever he'll go in Green Bay, he'll be a legend, especially a small town like that.
Yeah.
Insane. Absolutely insane.
Knowing Jared Cook, though, he might make some sort of
bonehead
blunder that cost him the Super Bowl.
Devontae Adams at 5 for 76. Randall Cobb, 7 for 62. They're going to try to get Jordy Nelson back for this week. We'll see. But Aaron Rodgers is just at this other level, and I've compared him in the past to Russell Wilson with his ability to just scramble and just make something happen, and what, like, that controlled frenzy. But he's obviously better than Wilson in that way. It's just... You get so scared as if you're rooting for the other team, where you give him so much time, he will find someone every single freaking time, right?
Like, the thing about him, though, is like, so a lot of times when he doesn't have the time either, he still kills you.
Sure, but I know my quarterback, right? I know Eli Manning's gonna either A, just throw it into the ground, B, just fall down and drop the ball, or C, just airmail it and throw an interception. Like, that's my quarterback. That's the guy that's won the Super Bowl, right? Aaron Rodgers. I feel like every single time he's going to make the play, he got absolutely destroyed. Destroyed on his blind side.
Yeah.
I could not believe he held on to that football.
Yeah.
And Aaron Rodgers usually gets up.
The late sack, but corner blitz sack. Yeah.
Yes. And he usually gets up and starts screaming at his offensive line when that happens. Like, because he's a dick, obviously. And he just starts screaming at people. He just turns around and calls timeout because he knew that, you know what? Whatever. What am I going to do? And he just calls, like, I'm fine, calls timeout, and makes the play. It was just
It's so funny.
Insane.
You just called him a dick. I was watching a game with someone that doesn't really watch a lot of football.
Right.
And all of a sudden she goes, what's wrong with this guy? Like, do people like him? Right? just watching the game. I said, no, not really.
Packer fans
certainly good.
Love him.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's exactly what I said. I said he's so good. People just learn to like him, especially if you're on his team or rooting for him. This is an amazing situation.
This is the kind of... Go ahead, Tony.
There's so many statistics in football. What I would love to see, and I'm probably going to try to look for it today, is the velocity of balls thrown on the run. Because Aaron Rodgers looks like, to me, like that pass to Cook, that ball was flying. That was on a run. There's no way he should have had anything on that pass.
His first touchdown to Rodgers was like a flick of the wrist sideways.
Yeah. So, you know, I remember when Blake Bortles came out of college, he had the third worst velocity of any of the quarterbacks that were coming out that year, right?
Still does.
So So I'm going to actually look up this Aaron Rodgers and see if I can find out if they keep some statistics on the run. Because I'll tell you what, I've never seen anything like that.
You know what the danger becomes now, though, in mainstream fantasy football? Because of a run like this, Aaron Rodgers is going to be going in the first round of leagues next year.
You think so?
Mainstream leagues, it's going to happen. I'm telling you.
Depends if they get a running back.
Yeah.
Yeah, but right? You know what? You're looking at it from our perspective. Mainstream fantasy leagues, people are going to look at this historic run, no matter where it ends, and they're going to want him in the first round. The average fantasy player in a mainstream office league.
So I don't know about that. I don't know if that's true.
I guarantee it.
I'm not doubting it, but I don't know if it's true either. But I'm not doubting it.
If they listen to this channel, they won't. But there's a lot of people who will take him in the first round. How can I go wrong with that pick? Look at what he did last year.
It's true. Yeah,
I'll tell you what. The thing is, if they throw the ball 50 times a game, and what a game from Montgomery yesterday, right?
He didn't get the ball enough. I don't think.
No, but he got in the pat. He made big plays though when he got the ball.
Yeah, he did. Made a couple big runs.
He made a couple catches on first downs. Like he moved the chains on a couple of those plays.
Yeah, you see, he's learning to become an NFL running back. But all of a sudden, he's come. Like yesterday, I saw cutback moves that like I hadn't seen from him before. He's learning as he goes along.
He just looks so stupid with that 88 in the backfield. I wish they would change.
Well, he wanted to. He requested a change.
Yeah.
He'll get it next year.
I'm sure they will. But it just looks ridiculous because he's a big dude, but he catches the ball so well, and they move the chains there. I don't know. They coached a great game yesterday, too. When we talk about that, like the one play where Dallas basically the timeout, that, you know, in a game that close, the difference, you can't look at Green Bay making any mistake. Aaron Rodgers had a couple passes. I don't know. He's just like, he's not Brett Favre where he'll make that many mistakes, but there was a couple throws there that were turning to interceptions. You're like, man, what is he doing?
Right.
And to Tony's point about injuries, it's like Rodgers got really pissed off at Geronimo Allison one point because he ran the wrong route. He's like, I don't give a shit how hurt Davante Adams is. Get him back in here. All of a sudden, Davante Adams miraculously back in the game.
You know what? It's funny you say that about Davante Adams, because I always think now when players go down and immediately come back, Tony, you've got me thinking that every time it's just Ben Roethlisberger, right? Like he's crying and he's dead in pain and he's running around on the next play. So Davante Adams reminded me of that, where he was just like writhing in pain. All right, maybe he was cramping up, but. And this isn't a shot at you, Scott. Don't take it like that. Michael Bennett does this every freaking game.
Does what?
Oh. Falls down. He's crying in pain. Has to be helped off. One play later, he runs back on the field, and he's bitching about a call. Every game!
There's a history between him and Jake Matthews.
But that has nothing to do with him crying on the field in pain and running back on the field one play later.
I thought he was done. From Bennett. I watch every game. I don't see it.
I'm just telling you what I see.
Well, yeah. It's funny. There was three instances of that this week, and two of them are brothers.
That's so true.
Right? Martellus.
Bennett.
Yeah. Martellus Bennett had one of the, like, it was looked horrific because anytime you see a guy not get hit, go down. And then he was out there two plays later.
Yeah.
Right? We saw Bennett there, and Davante Adams actually got rolled up on that play from behind, and I was like, oh, my God, he's not going to be back. He was back two plays later.
Because Adams, Adams saw the bend.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was like, man, and two Bennett brothers, both went down, and I thought it was like really bad.
Yeah, me too. That was crazy. That's just really, really funny. Tony, let me ask you. I know the answer is Scott. Were you impressed by Dak Prescott yesterday?
Oh yeah, I thought it was his best game as a pro. I thought when you get behind like that in a playoff game. And to lead them back. And you could tell this kid's a leader just by the way he acts on the sideline, the way he acts in the huddle. That's not a rookie quarterback. I thought he played amazing yesterday.
And then we got a report, like, I think it was during or after the game, I saw a report that, like, the Cowboys already want to trade Tony Romo during the offseason, and Denver's not interested.
You know, I think it's
like you saw
early.
Romo on the sidelines.
Yeah,
it's like they flashed him during like when they tied it up, and he was still expressionless.
Of course, but I think it's way too early, right? Like,
it's
right.
You didn't even look excited for them.
I think it's very, very funny that you have it leaking out. He wants to go to Denver. Now all of a sudden, Denver's not like. I think we're just way too early on that with Tony Romo and figuring out the next step, right? Dallas was still in the playoffs when we were talking about that. So
I just thought it was interesting that everybody looked happy for the Cowboys yesterday except for Tony Romo.
You don't think Romo's happy? Denver,
yeah. If Denver wants Tony Romo, though, they need to take the stance they don't want him because they want to cut him.
Of
they don't want to trade for him.
Right. To me, the most obvious spots for Romo are both Denver and Houston. We've said that all year, all of us on this show. Like, does Houston want to go spend more money on a quarterback? I don't know. But, like, Romo's a guy that can get him to Super Bowl, and then he doesn't really have to leave that. You know, he's basically living in the same house. So we'll see.
Doesn't have to leave the state.
Yeah.
Can take Brock Osweiler under his wing and say, look,
sure.
You know, this is how it's done, et cetera.
But will they, you know, will they, of course, have a, will they have the financial means to do that?
Well, maybe he takes one, wants to take, if he wants to go to a team that's going to win, maybe he has to take a discount.
Yeah.
Or is it money to go to a team that's a less apparent contender?
Yeah, we'll see.
Wherever he goes is going to be interesting fantasy-wise.
Yeah, definitely.
He can still throw the football. But he's got to have a good offensive line wherever he goes.
I felt bad for Brock Osweiler.
Why'd you feel bad for Brock?
I think it would have been a different game if Will Fuller hangs on to that ball.
Yeah.
It's a great point. Let's take a break here. When we come back, we'll talk about Houston and New England and Will Fuller dropping the football. Brock, what we thought of Brock Osweiler, what we thought of the Houston Texans in general. Let's take a break. It's the Road to Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. So you said going to break, Tony, that if Will Fuller hangs on to the ball, which, of course, he hasn't all year, but if Will Fuller hangs on to the ball, this would have been totally, totally different from Brock Osweiler.
Yeah, he was in there. He's going against tough New England defense, and you're like, he makes a great throw on a dime, 40 yards, and the ball goes through the receiver's hands, and then all of a sudden they get behind, and now they're throwing balls up, and they're trying to play from behind. And the New England defense, which is not a great defense by any stretch of the imagination, but when you play from behind, it gives them opportunities, and they make big plays, and it just got out of hand after that.
Yeah.
To me, that's the difference between a losing and winning team.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
You know, a winning team makes that catch. It's like you're on the other end, you throw that kind of, you throw that kind of bomb to say, you know, Julian Edelman, and he's a step behind the defender, he makes that catch. It's a difference to me between winning and losing.
Oh, of course.
Winning teams make that catch.
You say the same thing about Odell Beckham last week, about Travis Kelce this week, and here with Will Fuller
it's
as well.
It's a difference because especially in the playoffs, like Tony just said, those things lead to a chain reaction that can really just, the momentum kills you.
You absolutely needed to catch that ball through Will Fuller, because you have to make every play against this team in order to have any chance to win. You have to play a perfect game in order to beat New England.
New England, exactly.
And you didn't have that. Osweiler throws for 198, three interceptions. DeAndre Hopkins, 6 for 65. Will Fuller only had 3 for 16. C.J. Fedorowicz catches the touchdown here. C.J. Fedorowicz, he's a starting tight end in fantasy next year, right, Tony?
Yeah, I agree. I think if everything's the same, he's back in that offense. I think he is. And he ended up being their most reliable receiver down the stretch. We saw Hopkins over the last three games finally put some stuff together. But prior to that, probably the last seven or eight games, I believe he missed one game with an injury. He was the guy that they would go to.
Yeah, he certainly was. He dropped a pass in the end zone as well, by the way, Fedorowicz.
Yeah, yep.
So, you know, this Houston team, they weren't good enough. I mean, that's just what it comes down to. They simply were not good enough. Lamar Miller rushes for 73 yards on Saturday, and, you know, nobody else really does much of anything.
Yeah, Lamar Miller's like a ton of carries, but not many yards per pop. Look, he's a bell cow, and fantasy owners want a bell cow, but you want a bell cow who gets more of the yardage, more touchdowns, etc. You know, maybe if this offense ends up with more balance next year, things open up for him a little more.
Sure.
It could be the Denver Broncos next year, the AFC South, right? Because they're going to get J.J. Watt back.
Yep.
The defense could be crazy. And they'll be killing the offense coordinator on the sideline because the Houston Texans won't be able to score enough points.
100%. That's exactly what this team's going to be next year. If all goes well, right? Like, if all goes well, that's what they'll be. For the New England Patriots, as I said, Brock Osweiler was intercepted three times. All by players that went to the University of Rutgers. Rutgers, are you? So Bill Belichick, after the game, says it was a big day for Rutgers. And a big day for the Patriots defense. He did. He said that's true.
Yeah.
So Rutgers, what is going on here? Rutgers three times intercepts the Houston Texans, and a monster
even a
day.
College team can intercept.
There you go. A monster day for Deion Lewis. And funny story. So my buddy and I, during the Falcons game, we're like, all right, let's pick fantasy teams against each other. Just against each other, no prices, no nothing. We'll have a draft between the two of us, and we'll just keep it going to the Super Bowl. We'll draft a new team each week, and whoever has the most points total gets to the Super Bowl, right?
That's cool.
Yeah, it was fun. So three wide receivers, two running backs, tight end, no flex, quarterback, tight end, kicker, defense. And basically, so once you fill out all your running backs, I don't need to draft the running. I don't need to like draft my running back now. I can take him later in the draft because you can't pick another running back. So we get to the end of the draft. Like, I still need a running back. He doesn't. He owns LeGarrette Blount. He owns, let's say, Ezekiel Elliott. I own Le'Veon Bell. And I'm like, okay. Like, this is during the Falcons game, so I couldn't take a Falcons running back. I'm like, all right, who do I take? I can take Lamar Miller. I can take Spencer Ware. I got to go with my gut. Like, this is weird. I'm going to go with my gut. And my gut was Deion Lewis.
Nice gut.
And it's quite a large gut. I lost a few pounds a few moments ago, but it's gaining steam. But Deion Lewis, every time he scores, I'm just going crazy cheering for him. And Tony, what I was shocked about was not that Deion Lewis was so successful, but that they put the ball on the ground like three times and Belichick never pulled him.
No. The game plan definitely was Deion Lewis in this one, and they were going at it. Yeah, he had some great plays, and he had some crazy, insane plays. And the one thing that goes unnoticed in this is that their other play, James White, I think he only got on the field for one play, and he made it a 19-yard reception.
Yeah, it was a touchdown.
So they were featuring the running backs here.
Yeah, they certainly were, and the running back's not even LeGarrette Blount, right? Like, LeGarrette Blount on the day, he finishes with eight carries, but almost all of that came in like the fourth quarter when they're just trying to kill the clock a little bit.
He had the illness.
Yeah, he had the illness, and I kind of think, though, that they were going to, with that good defense, they wanted a faster back.
Yep.
I expect LeGarrette Blount to be front and center next week as they try to ram the ball down the Pittsburgh Steelers' throat.
Totally agree with that thought.
I can see that.
And almost everybody would be theoretically off LeGarrette Blount because of what Deion Lewis did this past week.
Got to remember with the Patriots, like Tony says, every week, you know, it's game plan specific. It always has been under the Belichick regime.
No question. Julian Edelman.
Look at last week.
Julian Edelman, 8 for 137. Chris Hogan, 4 for 95. I know he left this
My
game.
My boy.
Your boy Chris Hogan had 4 for 95. Malcolm Mitchell was inactive in this one, and Michael Floyd had a chance to really pass him, and he completely blew that, Tony.
Yeah, this is like, you know, this is the way it works in New England. I was shocked at how well he played the week before.
Right.
In that final week, I was like, wow, because nobody picks up the offense that quick, and then he definitely showed that he's still got a long way to go to learn that offense, and I don't think he'll be a factor. And it wouldn't shock me if Mitchell's ready to go that Floyd isn't dressed for the next game.
Oh, I totally agree with you. And I think, you know, that they were so happy with what Michael Floyd did a couple weeks ago that they were okay, like, really letting Malcolm Mitchell get healthy. Malcolm Mitchell will be ready to go this weekend, whether he's 100% or not. As Tony said, Michael Bennett left his game in agony, came back about a play later. And Tom Brady finishes 287, 2-2. Not a great Brady game. And the offense didn't look great. We said that. The Houston defense is legitimately fantastic. When J.J. Watt comes back next year, it will only just add to this wealth of talent on the defensive side of the ball for the Houston Texans. And they should be pretty good.
Yeah, A.J. Boye has been looking very impressive at cornerback.
He's a free, and he's interesting. AJ Bouye is a free agent this year too.
Yeah, they'll probably retain him.
You'd think so, but I'm sure a guy like that, who's like, I believe he was undrafted, like, he's going to go out and get wherever the money is. He's going to go get it.
Houston might give him the money.
They're going to have to if they want to keep him. Funny that both Deion Lewis and James White score touchdowns in this one. And, you know, it's, I also think back to when Deion Lewis is coming back, where I sat and I screamed, I'm like, don't waste Fab on this guy. We have no idea what he's going to do. No idea what he's going to do. We cannot trust him. And here he go, is leading this team in rushing in the playoffs, scoring three touchdowns, including that kickoff return for a touchdown.
It's what he's capable of. It's just like, what can you rely on, though? Especially that, you have to especially remember that for next year.
That kickoff was crazy because he hit like a different gear all of a sudden and just pulled away from everybody on that kickoff. It was told you how faster he is than everybody else.
Yeah, totally agree with that, Tony. He's that talented. In fact, the guy that was traded for him from the Eagles to the Patriots, he like tweeted yesterday saying, "What idiot traded me for Deion Lewis? Deion Lewis is amazing." And then somebody responded, "Chip Kelly." Period.
That's pretty funny.
It was hysterical. Chip Kelly,
Taylor
by the way,
Gabriel,
interview for the Jacksonville job. How about that? Interview for the Jacksonville job. No, for that coaching job. There's a secret interview before they hired Marone. God.
The Jaguars want to run their team into the ground next.
By the way, Chip Kelly's going to end up in New England. You know that, right? That's clearly where he's going to end up.
No, Belichick's not that good. Much smarter than that.
You say that, but he's very good friends with Belichick.
He can stay friends, but he ain't that dumb.
He does. He loves them. You wait, Scotty. You'll see. Take a break. We'll come back. Seattle, Atlanta. We break it down next on the Roto Experts.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
Number two of the Roto Experts is live here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. King Scott Angle proudly wearing his Russell Wilson jersey today, despite the fact that Russell Wilson is no longer playing in the 2017 playoffs. The Seahawks fall to the Atlanta Falcons 36-20. Scotty, this is a prediction that you actually made at the outset of the playoffs. You thought Seattle would win week one against the Detroit Lions and then fall to Atlanta. In fact, you've said Atlanta is going to the Super Bowl. That was your prediction. And so far, you are correct. In fact, I believe you also said Green Bay would beat Dallas, too.
Yeah, and I said Pittsburgh, and I said New England.
Yeah, you are. That's right. You are on a fire right now with your picks. You've gotten, I believe, every game correct thus far in the playoffs. Yeah. We'll get your predictions later on in the week, of course.
Should have put some money on it.
Actually, you already know. You picked Atlanta and New England to go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I predicted New England to beat Atlanta. Yeah.
That's right. And that was your prediction from the beginning here. Atlanta wins 36-20. What did you see from your boys?
Well, it's kind of what I saw coming. When they played well early, I said, okay, you know, maybe some offensive balance here with Rawls, but they went away from Rawls. 29 carries on the first drive, 5 the rest of the game. But what happened was is they got behind. It was there was that whole snowball sequence when Reese Adeo, the backup guard, fell on Russell Wilson.
Changed everything.
And, fell out. He caused Russell Wilson to fall. There was the big penalty on Kevin Pierre-Louis that, wiped out the Hester return, and it was just all downhill from there. And, the offensive line was exposed. Without Earl Thomas, they didn't hit big plays, but they kept moving the ball. Stephen Terrell played an awful game, without Thomas. I don't think they got enough of a pass rush. I give a lot of credit to the Atlanta offensive line for the way that they played. And the thing is here is interesting is that, Atlanta's head coach, Quinn, came from Seattle, and he's trying to mirror what the Seahawks did defensively and play very physical. He knew that coming in that Seattle's a physical team, and they matched their physical intensity on both sides of the ball. And the better team won to me. From a fantasy perspective, you didn't see a whole lot of rushing yards from the running backs, but they hit some of those big plays that they were supposed to. I thought it was a well coached game by Atlanta. Russell Wilson was under a tremendous amount of pressure. They got Graham involved early, but then he kind of faded out. You saw Doug Baldwin come up with one catch late and then talk some funny trash when they were still behind by 16 points. But, you know, that's just the way that, the team is wired. And I didn't expect them to win. It was, you know, as a fan of the team, it was I didn't have any fun watching the game after the first drive. But, you know, Atlanta is, you know, this is the best Atlanta team that I've seen. And it didn't shock me.
No, it was funny to me, Tony, was that we've screamed about the Seattle offensive line over and over and over again, and it was a backup lineman stepping on Russell Wilson's foot that, you know, ultimately cost him. Scott pointed it out. The two game...
I think it started it. It just started... You know,
that's what I'm saying, right? The two game-changing plays to me, and you mentioned both of them. It was that, and it was the holding on Devin Hester's kick return. I mean, those were the two plays that would have totally changed this game around.
Would have been 17-7.
Sure, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, that, like I said, those are two plays that stood out to me, Tony.
But it's like I said, though, with Will Fuller, too, in the playoffs, those sometimes with momentum, think snowball.
Yeah, and they did right there,
Tony. Let me ask a question, Scott. I really think that Seattle needs to break up this team. And the reason I say that is nothing to do with on the field. Pete Carroll's lost control of this team. I actually went back and watched the Atlanta first game against Seattle before this game.
Right.
And Richard Sherman was doing his own thing out in the field. They were in a zone defense, and he covered the guy man-to-man and just left a guy wide open for both those touchdowns late in that game. And then they see more of the same stuff there. Like, I think he's really lost control of this team, and there's a bunch of egos and a bunch of crazy guys out there. Do you think they need to shake up this team a little bit?
Nah, I would say not. I agree with you that things got a little out of control this year, because I believe, you know, this team is used to playing at a certain level, and they haven't matched that level the last year and a half, and I don't think these guys know how to respond to that yet. I think we saw it with Sherman this year and with Bennett. But, you know, you got guys like Bobby Wagner, Cliff Avril, Michael Bennett, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Russell Wilson, Doug Baldwin. You know, there's a certain mentality on the team that, you know, they're dealing with more adversity now. They've gone to being a great team in 2013 to being a good team now. And I think they're not responding to it in the best manner. I don't think you break up the team, though, because the talent of those guys is just too good. It's got to be your core. You don't break up a core like that because, like I was saying to Greg, the last 5 years, they haven't been to any less than a divisional playoffs. I don't think you break up a core like that.
Yeah, it was interesting to watch some of the mistakes that were made out there, because they are. They're all really talented players. But it seemed like it was a little craziness going on in a lot of... A lot of me attitudes out there that got in the way, even though they weren't going to win. I mean, the Atlanta was the better team that day, going into that game. And Russell Wilson, you could tell he played hurt all year after watching the play. He was ready and raring to go in that game, and he was running like we hadn't seen the whole season.
This is the Russell Wilson, as fantasy owners, we expected, right? Running all over the field, making plays happen.
46 rushing yards.
49,
you know, he took, I think it was, they said, he was hurried 17 times.
So what do you want him to do?
You know, what do you want him to do? There were some throws that in key spots were offline just because he was pressured so much. And they're like, I saw one guy I really respect on Twitter, Tommy G, and he said, Russell Wilson has no pocket presence. I was like, what pocket are you seeing? There is no pocket.
Yeah, I would not say that about Russell Wilson personally. Yeah. And it's funny, Tony, because we're talking about like inmates running the asylum, and I feel like we've said the same thing all year about Pittsburgh, right? Like Mike Tomlin has zero control of his team, and here they are in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. And, of course, it's sort of a story that seemed to fly under the radar. Joey Porter was actually back for that game as some of those charges were dropped in that situation. So don't know exactly what happened there in Pittsburgh there. So he was back.
And, we actually talked about that on Friday when you had off for the morning. We talked about that on Friday, and Corey explained to us basically they just had a fixer go in. They explained, you know, to the police what happened and that they needed Joey Porter on the sidelines, and they made it go away.
In Joey's defense, though, right? He never even made it into the bar, so I don't know how much of a problem he could have caused. Like, they said he was too drunk to even go into the bar. And so, you know, when you get these athletes, you get these celebrities, sometimes, you know, there's always people trying to, you know, cause a stir with these guys. So I don't want to blame Joey on everything on this one.
Porter did get arrested in 2010, too.
Oh, he's been arrested a whole bunch of times. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's got a little bit of an issue that, you know,
he does. And also, speaking of Mike Tomlin, after the game, Antonio Brown, like, Facebook lived this whole thing. And basically, Tomlin complained about the Patriots having an extra day and a half from the Steelers. But they're going to go in and they'll be scared of them or something like
they
that.
They caught him saying, we spotted those a-holes a day and a half.
Yeah, see, there you go. Yeah.
It's not going to go over good at board material.
I agree with Sussman, though, on the Chip Kelly thing.
Yeah! I don't know why you shoot it down. This is exactly the Belichick thing you need to do.
Belichick is not worried about Chip Kelly coming in and ruining he's put together. Chip Kelly's going to be the servant that situation, and I think Tom Brady's eyes would light up.
I also think, by the way, that
what is he going to do with that offense, though? It's like,
we'll find something for him to do.
Chip Kelly's guy that tries to hammer everybody into his system. How's that going to work in New England?
Because you're under Belichick now. We've never seen Chip Kelly under anybody.
So he doesn't fit then.
He'll fit. You'll watch. By the way, I'm confident that in San Francisco, it's going to be Josh McDaniels or Kyle Shanahan as head coach, but I think it's going to be McDaniels.
I think it is Josh McDaniels, and that's what I think more and more. It came out that, you know, that they've tried to bring Chip Kelly in a couple times, it looks like.
Yeah.
By the way, talking about next year.
Yeah.
And going back to that Atlanta game.
Yes.
And people overdrafting. People are going to start spending draft picks on Paul Richardson next year.
That was where I was going next. Yeah, that was exactly where I was going next. Because Richardson, two games in a row, he only caught three passes last week. The miraculous catches, don't get me wrong.
More spectacular catches this week.
This week had more spectacular catches. 4 for 83 to lead this team. Dougie Baldwin at 5 for 80 and 1. Jimmy Graham 3 for 22 and 1. But it was Richardson that, you know, kind of became a little bit of a star in this postseason with some of those crazy catches. And I think that people are going to remember that. Not remember that Tyler Lockett was out this entire time.
I said when Lockett went out, they might try to get Richardson involved.
You did. You didn't even say
and
that.
And I was a week late on it. I said that finale against San Francisco was going to happen, and then it happened during
the
playoffs.
You didn't even say that. You were saying he was going to have to step up with Tyler Lockett out, and he has. But Richardson, when he comes back, he's still going to be the fourth wide receiver next year.
Well, he might be the third. In the passing pecking order, because Jermaine Kearse is pretty much faded.
Okay.
The fact that Jermaine Kearse didn't make a single play in the playoffs, I think he's getting scaled back.
Okay.
Who would be the number two?
Well, it would be Baldwin, then Lockett, then Richardson in that pecking order.
I don't think that Lockett's guaranteed to be there, and the reason being from a team standpoint, right, you go and you get this guy more snaps than he's had in the past. You know how important he is to your special team.
Sure.
And special teams count for a lot. I could see Richardson getting into that job as the number two wide receiver.
I can't see
it.
I can't see it. I'll tell you why. Because Richardson's built like a toothpick. He looks like, do you remember in basketball? I'm going to throw back for you. He looks like Lewis Orr in a helmet, Tony. And like, he's not durable. I think they see, they always saw Tyler Lockett as the heir apparent to Golden Tate. And I think that they like Richardson, but I can't see him surpassing Tate Lock in the pecking order, unless there's another injury.
We'll see how it plays out.
Yes.
Yes. Because Paul Richardson absolutely getting it done in the playoff.
in that playoff contest.
Yeah, in that contest. Yeah.
On the other side of things, we talked about the losing team a lot. What about the winning team? The Atlanta Falcons and so much of what we've seen all year. Matt Ryan getting the ball to, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different receivers here on Saturday. Julio Jones banged up, 6 for 67.
Actually left the game for a little while.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He was in and out of the game in the second half. It seems like he re-aggravated that turf toe. He's obviously going to play this weekend. He's obviously, if they get the Super Bowl, we could be good to go. But again, a testament to Kyle Shanahan, a testament to Matt Ryan, that even when Julio went out for a while, they were able to spread the ball around.
Yeah, Dr. A was telling us that turf toe, you know, was great too during the regular season, can be a real nagging issue. We never saw him break the one big play that Julio always does, but to his credit, he's just like such a terrific receiver, in and out of his breaks, breaking people's ankles that, you know, they just need to give him as much rest as they can. You know, he's obviously not 100%.
No, he's...
Dr. A. I love when you mention Dr. A. I'm saying, at first I go, who's he talking? Oh, yeah, yeah, Dr. A.
Is he coming here soon?
Yeah, I think next week or something.
All right.
Taylor Gabriel, of course, again, some big plays in that one, and he's going to be a guy I think we're going to keep hearing about. And if Julio Jones isn't ready to go, they just keep going. It doesn't matter.
It does. Sanu caught a touchdown.
Sanu, in fact, he held on that ball. Almost dropped that one. That was impressive. Sanu holding on to that touchdown. 444 touchdown. And then you get the running backs, right? Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman. Both of them had good games. 11 for 57 for Coleman. 14 for 45 on the ground for Freeman. And then 4 for 80 through the air for Freeman. And both of these guys, again, guys I'm going to want on my team next year.
The thing with these running backs is it was the timing of their runs, not as much as the running numbers that were real backbreakers, and they were really like there was this one wonderful catch and run by Freeman. It's they complement each other so well.
Scott, you make it sound like they're dating and they'll be going out and sharing stories.
Maybe they should
complement each other.
The chemistry there is there. You know, I don't know if they met on Match.com or not, Tony.
I would take actually both these guys next year.
Yeah, that's what I said.
It's going to be frustrating.
Like, I feel like Freeman's the more dependable runner, though.
They're both.
Oh, he is.
He is for sure.
But you're going to have to put a second round pick on him, where the other guy might be able to get in the fifth round.
Get nice value. I think those are both viable. Where you should get them.
Oh yeah,
100%.
Get second and fifth round, and but I'm saying I wouldn't mind start having both these guys on the same team.
Yeah,
and maybe you don't start him in the same backfield every week, and maybe it gets to be a pain. Yeah, maybe it gets to be a pain in the neck because you're trying to get. But to me, you're going to get value from both those guys in those positions, and I think that's pretty solidified where they're going to go.
You look at the NFC Championship game though, and both of those defenses they're vulnerable. But Atlanta played a very physical game when it counted though, and made some key plays down the stretch.
Pretty cool, too, that the final game of the Georgia Dome will be an NFC Championship game.
They didn't know whether it was going to be the final game this week or next.
That's right. Yeah. And they got it, and they have it next week at home in the Georgia Dome. A fun game, Atlanta and Green Bay. It's going to be high scoring. It's going to be fun, which I think is what we look for here. It'll be cool.
Ryan's won two playoff games, but I still believe, like, in order to people stop saying that he's more than a regular season quarterback, he's got to beat Rodgers here. Otherwise, the narrative doesn't change.
Correct. 100%. Because you're at home, right? You're at home. You have as good of a team here, as good of a team as you ever had.
It's the best Atlanta team I've ever seen.
Because the defense, even the one that went to the Super Bowl against Denver.
Wonder if Steve Butkowski is watching. Yeah, the Chris Miller Falcons, yeah, they're better than them, I think.
What's the Chris? Who's Chris Miller?
The quarterback.
Chris Chandler. There you go.
Chris Miller was a quarterback.
I don't know who Chris Miller was. Oh, yeah. Okay. Chris Chandler's a quarterback. Jamal Anderson, the running back.
Dirty Birds.
Exactly. Yeah. This team's better than that team?
I think they can be.
Okay. Three touchdowns, no interceptions, 338 for Matt Ryan, but you're absolutely right. He needs to beat Rodgers next Sunday and get the Super Bowl in order to forget the narrative.
You know what the other thing is, though? We've never seen a Rodgers-Brady Super Bowl.
I mean, that's true.
Rodgers Brady would be more compelling to me than Ryan Brady.
Oh, believe me, the Atlanta Falcons are the last team that the NFL wants in the Super Bowl. The last team. They would much rather have Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Like, Rodgers versus Brady is the best Super Bowl they can get, of course.
We've seen Roethlisberger Rodgers already.
We have.
Yeah.
And they'll take that again. Like, they'll take Pittsburgh and Green Bay. They obviously want Brady versus Rodgers, New England and Green Bay. Atlanta's like the worst possible thing that could happen to them.
Oh, yeah. They're very entertaining.
Yeah, it's not about you and me. Yeah. It's about the casual fan that knows Tom Brady, that knows Ben Roethlisberger, that knows Aaron Rodgers, that has no idea who the hell Matt Ryan is.
Yeah.
That's just the truth. Okay, we'll take a break here.
Nice guy.
He is a nice guy. He's a Walter Payton nominee. We'll take a break here. When we come back, we'll kind of sum up the weekend a little bit and sum up some more football talk right after this in the Roto Experts. Out of the Roto Experts here. A couple final takeaways from this weekend. We crap on it a lot, but Tony, the kicking this week was spectacular. right? Mason Crosby nailing two 50-yarders here, 56 and a 50.
I thought the second one was going to be no good.
Same.
It looked like it, yeah.
Because he crushed the first one before Jason Garrett's timeout. He crushed it right down the middle, no doubter. And then the second one was left the whole way, and it just inched in. And then before that, the 56-yarder, like, it didn't. It was a line drive kick. It was wobbly, and it goes through too. Mason Crosby, who just a couple of years ago was the bane of Packer fans' existence, nails these kicks. And everyone talks about Jared Cook and the amazing catch. That was still a 50-yard field goal here that Mason Crosby nailed.
First two kickers off the board in fantasy drafts next year, Dan Bailey and Mason Crosby.
Dan Bailey nails a 50-yarder. And what about Chris Boswell, six for six?
He'll go third, yeah.
And the thing is with Boswell, you never want Pittsburgh's kicker because they always go for two anyway, or a lot of the times they go for two. And Boswell came out, and none of the kicks were 50 yards or anything like that, but he came out, and he just nailed them.
Yeah, he did.
The kicking, that's
revenge of the kickers this weekend.
It was.
Yeah, it was. The Crosby kick, though, was great. I'll tell you what. Jason Garrett pulled off one of the greatest timeout. It was very good execution. It was, like, right before. There, Buddy Ryan needs to go to the Jason Garrett timeout school.
That's one of the one of the best playoff games I've watched in a while.
Yeah, that was a great one. That was a great playoff game, back and forth. So the kickers, something that, you know what?
One out of eight ain't bad so far.
That's not true. The last night was good.
Pittsburgh was okay.
You didn't watch the second half of the game.
I told you I could watch when I got up.
So you watched video. But that's why. So what I'm saying was you weren't in the moment, right? Like watching it all at one time. I think that may have taken something away for you.
Wasn't a lot of offense though last night.
Doesn't mean it's not a good game. It's not a lot of offense.
It was good, but it's like it wasn't, you know, wasn't spectacular to me. I mean, you watch field goals last night,
but it was still a good game.
It was a good game, but it wasn't like. Well, I'll say, look, one spectacular game, one good game, and six clunkers so far.
There you go. I can allow that.
Yeah.
And really, up until yesterday, every home team had won. There'd be no drama even. Yeah. Like it wasn't even close, and there was nothing to even think about. And then yesterday happens, and two away teams win. Tony, let me ask you this: are the best four teams the four teams that are left?
I don't think so. I think Dallas is definitely one of the best four teams in the NFL. They lost a tough one at home, and again, it could have went either way. But I think we got four out of the five. And I don't know where I would put Dallas, but I really think they belong in that mix. But we have, I think, the best matchups, to tell you the truth. So basically, Atlanta and Green Bay are going to go and throw the ball against each other. It's going to be a great game. I think Pittsburgh and New England are going to be the two best teams in the AFC that could put up the most points. I think we got the two best matchups you could have had going into the playoffs.
Right. It's funny because when we sat here before the playoffs started and said, you know, who we think, you know, could give New England their best shot, right? We said Pittsburgh, and here we are, Pittsburgh, New England. And we said, you know, if Green Bay gets through Dallas, you know, any combination. Like, if Seattle was playing well, we can get Dallas-Seattle. That would be cool. Or Green Bay-Seattle would be fun. I think, in fact, before the playoffs started, we didn't necessarily. I just feel like we still underappreciated Atlanta. Not you, Scotty, because you called Atlanta being this good. You obviously had them going to the Super Bowl. But I still think that aura around them existed that they weren't this good. I think they changed a lot of people's mind, mine included, to be quite perfectly honest with you, this past weekend. I think that.
I know the defense. Yeah, the defense played better than they had all season long at the end of the season. So really, it was going into. If you go back to about week 12. They were being run on more than any other defense in the league. They were actually in the top 10 worst teams in passing, and it got better and better every week from about week 12 on. And then we saw them play very good against Seattle defensively. And they were, as Scott mentioned, they were very, very tough, and they matched them with toughness there, which Atlanta has not been something we've been talking about in the last few years.
Yeah, I believe, you know, to win this deep into the playoffs, to win at this level, you have to be physical. You got to be tough. And I see that from Pittsburgh right now. New England, you know, the savvy is there. You know, as far as Green Bay goes, how physical can they be? They've won with a lot of finesse so far. You know, that's the one thing that I think Atlanta may have over them. I think they might be more physical defensively than Green Bay. That could be a difference.
The What impresses me even more about Green Bay, not just about Aaron Rodgers, is that like they've been beat off, right? Their secondary has gotten hurt in major ways. Jordy Nelson missed.
They got free agents back there.
Literally free agents. Like Jordy Nelson led this team in receiving, had the most touchdowns in the NFL. He missed the game, and this team doesn't miss a step. Like, that's an impressive job. I know everybody wanted Mike McCarthy's head. He's done a nice job.
Yeah, it's...
That's why I don't understand how Aaron Rodgers is not going to win the most valuable player. Like, I can't even comprehend it, because that team is not good.
It's crazy.
I was talking with Tony's while you were out, though. It's like,
yep.
And I'm not saying it's fair, but this is what people are going to look at, is they're going to look at the full scope of the season and see they started off 4-6, and that's going to be the difference between Ryan and Rodgers for a lot of voters.
You think so?
Yeah, because it's going to be most valuable player for a full season. That's why Brady won't win, because he missed four games.
Well, you can't miss four games and win the MVP.
Right. Well, I'm saying in the same regard, Aaron Rodgers was hot for the final 6 to 7 weeks of the season. And they're going to say, look, it wasn't over a full schedule like Matt Ryan.
It's close to me. Like, Tony really swayed me the first time he brought up Aaron Rodgers. Like, wow, I didn't even think of that. Like, Tony killed it. And then you get to Matt Ryan and what he's done and how he spread it out and having the best season of his career. I get it. Like, I can see how that is. Because, Tony, we said Green Bay is not a good football team without Aaron Rodgers. Is Atlanta a good football team without Matt Ryan?
Well, see, you got two quality running backs there. The defense played better from, like, week 12 on. Could another quarterback go in there and play as well as Matt Ryan? No. But I think in that division, they would have a chance to win that division without Matt Ryan.
Yeah, wow. They could have. They could have. You know, you could see Tampa Bay getting there, perhaps. They could have won the division. You take away Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay probably comes in last place in that division. So
you guys all make good points, but I just don't think Rodgers is going to win it.
He might not. I mean, judging by the all-pro votes, which are voted by the same people that won the MVP votes, or the votes on the MVP, Matt Ryan will take it. But both quarterbacks, nonetheless, going head-to-head, NFC Championship game, it'll be fun.
You know, the one thing that I mentioned that, you know, a lot of people don't forget, and I'm not saying you don't forget, but that, like, the mainstream will forget, too, is that the MVP doesn't include the playoffs.
No, the MVP doesn't include the playoffs. That's important. And I believe, Scotty, you correct me if I'm wrong here, it is voted on before the playoffs even start.
Yeah, I believe so.
So
yeah, I think you had to have your ballots in by Saturday.
Right,
yeah.
So you gotta take it into account.
In that playoff, yeah.
Where Atlanta finished in the standings, and the fact that, you know, Green Bay had to win in the final week, I think that's going to make a difference for a lot of voters.
I think that can make a difference. Not so much if they started.
And that's going to point back to the fact that the Packers started 4-6. They're going to look at the scope of the entire season. Ryan was the guy they're going to think that carried them to the record that they had in the number 2 seed in the conference.
Aaron Rodgers votes.
And then you're going to have your Dallas Cowboy votes, too.
Well, I think they'll take them away from each other, right? I think Jack and Ezekiel will hurt each other, probably.
Probably.
More than anything else. All right. Any final thoughts? Divisional playoff weekend, Scotty?
I think we pretty much covered everything. The interesting thing to me, though, is moving forward is that Pittsburgh in New England, you know, it's like intangible-wise, like, wasn't a good look for Antonio Brown to do what he did in Facebook, and it might piss the Patriots off, and you don't want to do that at home. I think for Pittsburgh, it's going to be defense that determines victory for them.
Tone, any final thoughts here?
Pittsburgh Steelers need to get Ladarius Green back in that mix. They had a good game from Jesse James, but another game breaker they need in that offense besides Antonio Brown.
Yeah, no question about that.
That's going to be, and that's the thing I look at, like, the teams that lost, what are they going to need most during the year? And I'll just go with real quick. Seattle needs to fix
their offensive line.
Needs to fix their offensive line and maybe do something else in the running game to give ProSize a compliment.
You've said that before, give ProSize a compliment. We didn't exactly see all that much of CJ ProSize to think that he's, like, this locked-in guy.
No, I'm not saying he's... If he stays healthy and he shares touches with somebody else, he can be very, very explosive, I think.
It's funny to me that you just kind of throw out Thomas Rawls. Like, he was good.
Thomas Rawls can't stay healthy.
He was healthy last 2 weeks.
Exactly, 2 weeks. Thomas Rawls can't stay healthy. And then
But wait a minute, but C.J. Procise is hurt. So why are you saying Thomas Rawls can't stay healthy, but C.J. Procise can?
I said if Procise stays healthy. You know, Jerry's out. Last 2 years, Rawls have been hurt.
Thomas Rawls led the National Football League in yards per carry last year.
Yeah, last year. This year, he might be able, he's so physical that...
You sound like Sussman now, just throwing out is the whole history, Sussman. He's looking at this year only. What happened here? Did you have influence on Scotty?
I apologize.
Well, that was last year, and he got hurt last year, too. So...
Well, I mean, it's the National Football League. There's not many guys
get hurt more than others. It's factual.
And then you throw in there a guy that we haven't even seen play. Like, I don't even know what number he is. I can't even remember what number C.J. Procise is.
22?
Greg, do you know what number he is?
28.
See? Yeah. We had it. Yeah.
I thought that was C.J. Spiller's number when he was on that team. So, I guess I was wrong. Anyway.
No, I'm sorry. Procise 21. 21.
Oh, he didn't even
know. Scott didn't even know.
I did know.
Scott didn't even know. How good is that?
I saw him play this year. That game against Carolina, he was electric.
I saw Thomas Rawls play last weekend. He was amazing.
I think the jury's more out on Procise, though. It's like, this was his rookie year. Yeah, he got hurt. But, you know, if they put him with somebody who's like, you know, like real physical and, you know, can be...
You just killed C.J. Thomas Rawls got hurt in his rookie year. You pointed out
You got two running backs here that are not durable. I don't think you can keep both of them, and I think Rawls would be the one to go. And
I'll tell you, why can't you keep all three of them? What's wrong with Alex Collins? Every time I see him play, he looks great.
He does. He does, but I think they're looking at him for depth right now. I wouldn't be surprised if Rawls is not a Seahawk next year. They don't want two injury-prone running backs. Then looking at Dallas, I think Dallas needs to get another pass rusher and a playmaker in the secondary.
Dallas to me, right? Like, they don't really have to do much, right? You just improve the defense and you'll be there.
Defensively, they put in a lot of effort, but they only have a difference maker at linebacker. And I think they really want to win a Super Bowl. They need more difference makers up front and in the secondary. As far as the Chiefs go, I think they're not, you know, Jamaal Charles, the era is over. That team needs to get, they're good defensively. I think they need to get another running back and maybe a playmaker in the passing game.
Mm-hmm.
And who is the Texans?
They have one, don't they? Isn't Tyreek Hill that guy?
Tyreek Hill's like do-it-all kind of guy, but like, you know, you got Jeremy Maclin there as your main guy. I just don't feel like they're not dynamic enough. There was actually like a story this morning that I wrote. Should they move on from Alex Smith? How far can Alex Smith really take this team? And don't give me some dim-witted nonsense about his regular season record, okay?
Yeah.
You know, the guy can't take them far. You know, there's not a lot. Have we thought at all about Tony Romo in Kansas City?
Funny.
No.
I never.
Look, quarterback's watered down, but this guy's not going to take him anywhere.
Yeah, that's the problem, though. Like, I talk about it time and time again, right? Is that, you know what, it's easy to replace the guy, but where do you go to get a replacement?
Right. So that's what I said yesterday, too, Tony. Like, and I'm sitting watching the game, and I was explaining to Judy, like, you know, Alex Smith, and he's like this prototypical game manager. Like, Aaron Rodgers goes to wins game, this guy's there, and like, they traded their second round pick for him. Everyone's like, it's crazy trading a second round pick for Alex Smith. And you sit there, and you're like, wow, a lot of teams, the Jets, for instance, would kill for Alex Smith.
Yeah, like, there's just not enough quarterbacks to go around. It's just not. It's interesting, though, if Tony Romo was really thought about winning and, you know, want to throw money out, whatever, that's an interesting standpoint of putting him there.
I like that one.
I never even considered that. I don't know what they would do with Alex Smith if Kansas City's ready to move on.
And just to summarize my point with Rawls is that they brought in Procise to really be a complimentary guy to their running game.
Yes.
They can put him everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, once in a while a run, once in a while. They need to get back to when they had Marshawn Lynch and they had like a real physical running back that can get in a real rhythm and that they can trust on to be durable, you know, to get back where they were. And I don't think Rawls is that guy.
Right. I mean,
I don't understand, though, why Alex Collins doesn't get more of an opportunity, because I didn't believe in this guy at the beginning of the year.
You did, Scott.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Watching him play, I'm like, this is the guy. He actually put up huge numbers in college, and he shouldn't have slid as far as he did in the draft. This is a guy that I think is going under the radar that I'm surprised.
He might open the door for college to be the guy.
We'll see. I mean, they didn't trust him, but I don't want to throw away
Thomas. He's kind of built. I'm not saying he's good at it. He's kind of like a got a like a Jamal Charles type built, physical build.
Isn't he big? He's bigger than Charles is, isn't he?
Just the way he runs, it's he kind of reminds me of him. Like,
is it because he has
the way
dreads?
He plants?
Is it the dreads?
No.
Okay.
I'm talking about the running style. I'm not that simple.
Alex Collins.
I'm not a simpleton who looks at guys who have dreads and.
Well, isn't he a lot bigger than Alex? I mean,
he's 5'11", 216.
And what? He's 5'11", 216. You said.
What is Charles?
That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
All right, Jamal Charles is 5'11". That's pretty cool. That's good, Scotty. 5'11". And give me a second. 5'11", 200.
Yeah.
Not terrible.
Just the way he plants and the way he reads the defense, he kind of reminds me of that.
I still like Jamal.
I don't think he has Jamal Charles' speed, though.
I like Jamal Charles, which is why I lose in fantasy. All right.
They had a problem with Collins, though, because he played in that New England game and, like, he had a big fumble and, like, it kind of started veering away from him, like, and then he had another fumble in a game down the stretch. So he's got to hold on to the football.
For me, my last takeaways here from this past weekend is just there wasn't really many surprises. You know, we looked and we dug and we dug and we dug, and we kept digging.
We want those surprises.
I didn't say what we wanted or we didn't want, but usually there is something that surprises us. Not this weekend, which isn't a bad thing.
I think the average football fan always looks for those surprises.
They do.
Yeah. What's going to be the next Eli who's going to come into the
absolutely.
Come into the playoffs and, you know,
not,
upset
not even just
everybody.
That, but like, oh, wow, you know what? The Kansas City does this. They can go to the Super Bowl, right? Or if this happens, this can happen. Like, they always look for that. Like, I've said it the whole time. You're the Seahawks fan. You're wearing a Seahawks jersey right now, and you disagree with me. I thought Seattle was winning this game. Like, I said it all week to you last week.
I didn't think without Earl Thomas that they could win it.
I know you didn't. And I just said, listen, Atlanta's not that good. Blah, blah, blah. I was wrong. Everything kind of was as we thought it would be. And that's it. That's my takeaways.
According to OK Celebrity, Jamal Charles' wife, Whitney Golden, is the fourth prettiest wife in the NFL.
Hey, that's pretty. It's a good stat right there. Appreciate it.
According to who, though?
OK Celebrity.
One guy that wrote it?
Why, do you not agree? Oh, I mean, you know, Russell Wilson has his wife. Michael Bennett has a wife. You know,
I didn't say anything
about the Seahawks. What the hell are you talking about?
Making a joke.
Giselle Bundchen, different guys have different perspectives.
Of course.
Yeah. You like women Giselle built like Bundchen. Microphones, I don't.
I like women built like microphones. What does that mean? Wait, what does that mean?
I don't even know
you like
what a
very
microphone
skinny
looks
chicks.
Like.
How do you know? Wait, how do you know what I like?
You always talk about women you like.
Don't you
like Taylor Swift?
No, I don't find Taylor Swift attractive. I told you that on multiple occasions.
Yeah, right. You like it just
what
for
about
music.
Yes.
Like, I believe that.
I don't understand. I've told you that multiple times.
Giselle Bundchen came number two. Guess who's number one?
Ciara?
You'll never guess. Lance Moore's fiance, Casey Trione.
Whose fiance?
Lance Moore.
Oh, take a look. All right.
Lance Moore, the former Saint?
Let's
see here. Casey Trione. Take a look during the break, because we'll be right back. Here are the extras of the run there. Sonia, I was very impressed by Casey Trione.
Yes.
Until she had a child, and now she's married with a child. I'm just not interested anymore.
Oh, really? That's not good for the listening audience out there. That you
Greg
write
Suss
them off
not
after
be
they
attracted
have a child.
To you if you're married or have a child.
No. That's a good thing. But after child is the thing.
I'm not going to be attracted to a married. It's not nice to be interested in a married woman, Scott.
You could still say she's attractive.
Oh, she's of course she's a beautiful woman. I just, you know, for me, it loses something now that she's married with a child. It just doesn't do it for me.
Yes.
Is that okay?
Sounds a little discriminatory, but I'll let it go.
The words of Scott Engel. I'm going to let this one go. And we'll work on the next one, right, Scott? I mean, that's a good one.
But I guess, you know what, there are certain women that, you know, I forget about that even have kids. Like, you know, when I think Kim Kardashian, do I think that she has had two kids? No, I don't. But I guess it depends on, I guess I was just looking at her, the Instagram of this woman. It's all about her child, which is nice, you know, which it should be. But for me, you know, loses something. That's fine.
You know, Corey Parson, of course, off today. He had one of those Donald Trump generators over there for his tree generates on his Facebook page. It says, the fantasy exec is a totally overrated clown who speaks out without knowing the facts. Donald Trump going after Mr. Corey Parson.
That was probably the best thing I've found ever, I would say. I remember I texted Tony saying, this was, about to make your day.
Trump generator.
A Trump generator.
Yeah. You got to have one of these, especially with the inauguration coming. This is going to come in handy.
Yes. Yes, it will. And you know what? If you tweet
Tony's
it out, and you just change. Tony, if you tweet that out, right, and you just like change the at name to, instead of Trump generator, you know, at real Donald Trump, you will 100% convince people he says that. You know that.
Oh, yeah. People, there's people out there that, you know, the elevator don't go all the way to the top.
Yeah, they'll be drafting Aaron Rodgers in the first round next year.
You really wanted to get away from the whole Trump generator thing, huh?
What's that?
You really wanted to get away from the whole Trump generator thing.
No, I just felt that statement felt fit, so.
Okay.
I'm fine with you guys want to go home with it.
Jesse Sanchez, LV.com, says the Blue Jays nearing a deal with Jose Bautista. Surprise, Tone?
No, I'm surprised. No, I'm not surprised. They need an outfielder bad. That offense is really looking thin. I think they both have to fall in love with each other. They have to get back. Jose thought he was going to get one more big contract, but at 36 years of age, people are not taking a shot on this guy.
No, they're not. You know, we heard Cleveland and Minnesota, you know, possibly as suitors, but and we heard talk about Jay Bruce and some other outfielders possibly going to Toronto. But look, at least with Bautista, they know what they get. They know each other, you know, and they still need that power bat there.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense too, right? They obviously need to fall back in love with each other. However, these two together, it just makes a lot of sense. It just makes too much sense for that to happen. You're comfortable. They need an outfielder. Jose Bautista, I'm sure what he's going to ask for from Toronto is probably the same deal he turned down, right? Like 1 year, 17.2. Not a surprise to see this happen.
You just want to turn into an Ian Desmond here.
Well, sure. What did Ian Desmond take? 1 year and 10 mil or something?
Yeah,
like
he outpriced himself.
Oh, yeah. So. And then now wound up doing okay.
Dexter Fowler did that last year.
No, Dexter Fowler turned out okay. Dexter Fowler bet on himself.
Yeah.
And it worked out unbelievably for him.
Yeah.
So, good job by the Blue Jays, by Jose Bautista, getting back together, so it seems. Still some major free agents out there, including Mark Trumbo, Mike Napoli, two major hitters that are there. Jay Bruce still on the trade block. A lot of players still on the, out there that are surprising. I really thought Jason Hamill would see much bigger market, Tony.
I did too. With pitching being, you know, teams, especially like the Baltimore Orioles, you think of teams that are pretty good. The New York Yankees, a pretty good team that might be short, you know, going five deep on the pitching staff. The Houston Astros, another team. Like, I can't believe there isn't a market for this guy.
It doesn't make sense when everybody, it's kind of like quarterbacks, right? Like, everyone's always looking for pitching. This guy pitched well.
Yeah.
Unless he is saying he's worth a hell of a lot more than he is. How is there not, if Ivan Nova can get a contract, how can this guy not get a contract?
It has to be that he has too high expectations of himself and expecting a bigger payday.
Yeah, 100%. And we'll see where he ends up. My favorite thing, though, is this time of year that you hear Baltimore attached to every free agent and then they get nobody. Because it happens every year, right? Like, literally every single year, you are linked to a free agent and you get nobody. And that's what's going to happen.
Well, I think that you don't, you know, people go in. Like, the Marlins are good at this, too.
Yeah.
They want to win.
Yeah.
They want to be the second team
yes.
in the negotiation. So they get talked about, but they don't want to have to sign any of these
yes,
guys.
Yes, exactly. That is exactly correct. And they like being talked Duke about. They want to let their fans know they're in it. They're considering it.
Kenley Jansen.
Right. Yeah. Right. But ultimately, they don't really want him. They don't really want to spend money on it. So.
I think the two Marlin fans left both know what's going on, though.
It's not very nice, huh?
Yeah, it's the truth, though.
It's not the truth. You're exaggerating. It's actually.
No.
It's false.
All right, I'm exaggerating. There's one Marlin fan, not two.
Why do you hate the Marlins for?
What?
Why do you hate the Marlins for?
They have an awful fan base. They don't deserve that team. If Giancarlo Stanton, and I'll say this, you know, with when Jose Fernandez was there,
mm-hmm.
if those two guys were playing in any other city, and you could see them on any given night, you know, there would be a hot ticket. They don't appreciate what's there.
I agree. I agree with that. It sucks. Florida, but what surprised me is why Florida isn't a better spot here for baseball, right? Like, you have every Grapefruit League team is in Florida. Tampa Bay can't sell. Miami can't sell. Why is that, Tony?
I think that what happens is that a lot of people are transplanted residents of Florida, right?
Okay.
So basically what happens is that they grow up fans of the Yankees, they grow up fans of the Red Sox, the Cubs and the White Sox, and they don't have a long history in Tampa or Miami. I think it takes generations to build up a fan base that goes and supports your team each and every year. And I see the same thing with a lot of the new franchises, like the same thing with the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know what? They draw pretty good for a city that's not as populated as other cities, and they don't have, you know, grandfathers that grew up and you followed the Jacksonville Jaguars and you sat down there and watched the games with your grandkids and things like that. It just takes a couple generations, I think, and it's too new in Florida.
And that's one layer to it. Another layer to it that's distinctive with the Marlins is when they came along in 1993, they had a lot of fan support. They won their first World Series in 1997. Then they tore the team apart nearly immediately, and a lot of people were disenchanted by that. And then they won again in 2003, and ownership promised them they wouldn't do it again, and they did.
We take a break here. When we come back, we'll continue talking a little bit of baseball. Baseball draft's coming up. FSTA next week. Let's talk a little bit more baseball in the next 10 minutes here on Roto Experts in the Morning. Mentioned Jose Bautista back to the Blue Jays. John Heyman, as Scotty just told me, sentenced maybe 2 years. Ken Rosenthal follows it up. 2 years, about $35 to $40 million. Scotty, good deal?
Yeah, I think so. Like I said, it's comfortable for them. Also, we're hearing that the Yankees may bring back Nathan Eovaldi, and that Brett Gardner's probably going to remain a Yankee for the foreseeable future.
No surprise necessarily on either item, as Nathan Eovaldi had Tommy John. He's going to miss this season for the most part. So, you know, Yankees pay for the surgery, rehab on their dime. And then Brett Gardner, you're getting late, nobody wants him, and you'll put him back. So, no real
We've
surprise.
We've heard the Brett Gardner rumors every year, though.
Literally every year.
Nothing really materializes.
Yeah. So, you know, again, not really surprised. What kind of... Is Brett Gardner somebody that should even be drafted anymore, Tony, in fantasy baseball? Because I look at Brett Gardner, he doesn't do anything I want. Nothing.
It's really funny when you look at it, right? And you think of that Brett Gardner. Now, the one thing he could do, depending on where they bat him in the batting order, possibly is deliver some runs scored for you. Other than that, at this point, if he's not stealing bases, there's not a lot to love here.
No, I know Scotty. I know you're a Brett Gardner fan, mainly, you know, as a person.
It's got
whatever.
Nothing to do with it.
I didn't say it did. No. I'm just saying you are friendly with him. But as a fantasy player, he offers nothing.
Well, you know, he might get to 20 steals. You know, we can hit about 270, hopefully. Maybe crack double figures, give you about a dozen home runs. So I wouldn't say he's not draftable. I mean, he's certainly not what he was earlier in his career fantasy-wise, but I think he'd do worse maybe as a fourth or fifth outfielder. Maybe fifth.
There you go. Fine. As a fifth outfielder, fine. You know, he hasn't hit 270, unfortunately, since 2013. Last year was his, what, four-year low here in stolen bases. It was his... 6 year low in home runs. Is this a player, Tony, that was hurt, or is this a player that, you know, just on the decline?
I think both. I think you saw injuries. You do see a guy on the decline. He had 634 at bats, though, with only 7 home runs, is alarming to me. I think Scott's a little high on the batting average. I think he's going to be able to 260 hitter.
Sure.
He hasn't hit 273 since 2013. The stolen bases are the one thing that you could get him in your lineup and put him in there if you had him as a fourth or fifth outfielder.
Yeah. The strikeout rate's been going down the last 4 years, though, so you get top out at 270.
He wouldn't even get a batted balls in play of 310, which is higher. And he still hasn't. The strikeout rate's been going down. He's putting balls in play, but he's got, as established with the 7 home runs, he has nothing left in the bat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the problem is we don't know where he's going to bat. The Yankees came out late last week. Brian Cashman said that, yeah, exactly, that there's a very good chance they'll separate the top of the order, Jacoby Ellsbury and Brett Gardner, who batted 1-2 the last couple of years. They're going to change that because they know it's not working. They know it's not effective. And as Tony just said, there's a good chance Gardner hits ninth, and there's just such a little point of having
him. And at 33 years old, usually, you know, you're starting to see a decline in a guy stolen bases, so, you know.
And the Yankees don't like to run anyway.
You could be looking at a 12-12 kind of guy, you know?
We forget it, how old he has gotten all of a sudden. He's 33.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's quickly 33 years old.
It's like all of a sudden the age creeps up on you. Like, wow, Eli Manning's 36 years old.
Do we know that home run's going to go back up? I don't know. I mean, 7 last year after 16 and 17 the years before. I don't know what the deal was. I don't know the line drive rate and the fly ball to home run ratio, Tony, if it was just fluky. But that 7 home runs is concerning. Like, I know,
the isolated power took a precipitous dip from 140 to 101.
Right.
You know, the career marks 137, 140, 166. I'm not, even if it goes back to 130, say, yep, or 125.
Yeah, a couple more home
runs. I think, you know, about another 4 home runs.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's hard to look at the career mark of a 33-year-old and try to use that as the baseline.
It's just, but a 39-point drop in ISO, that's kind of precipitous for 1 year.
It tells you that it, probably an injury, but I don't expect any. I don't expect, like, he could improve on that, but I don't think we're going to get close to the 140.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the steamer projections for him this year on FanGraphs are 12-12, which I just said. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. 12-15 if you're lucky.
It's not a guy, unless your name is a fifth outfielder, that I'm interested in pursuing.
I don't think he's totally undraftable, though, because in those later rounds, you know, you're going to have to put in a guy that necessarily is not ideal.
Let's talk more about him. I want to know about your guys' thoughts on Jacoby Ellsbury, too, in regards to the New York Yankees outfield. Let's talk about that. We'll go over football. I'll do like some basketball in this 9 o'clock hour. One more hour to go. Roto Express rolls on after this. There. If you're enjoying the Roto Experts in the Morning on demand, well, there's a whole nother hour that you could listen to live every single weekday morning from Monday to Friday. If you want more laughs from Corey Parson, listen to the Roto Experts from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern every single weekday morning. It's the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.